Female qualities give Krishna prem, short and simple to the point. You're not beating around the bush, not indirect, prokshavad. You have it when you get Krishna prem, you don't have it when you get Krishna prem. It's simple as that. So then the curiosity, what are female qualities? Do I have any? I look in the mirror, I'm supposed to be a female. And then the guy looks in, I'm not a female, I'm a male. I'm a man. I'm a good deal. So what does she say about this? Devotion to Krishna is based on service and attachment to Krishna. And this is the essence of the female approach. Service and attachment. Like a woman by nature, she likes to serve a worthwhile person. Let's say her lover, her husband, boyfriend, whatever. She has it in her makeup, in her swabhav to serve. And it's nature of women to get attached. Everyone gets attached. Men also get attached to their loved ones. But women are naturally attached. Who picks up and holds the baby to their chest? The woman or the man? The woman. The woman always, you know, girls go to sleep with teddy bears. Boys go to sleep with tanks. Trucks. Race cars. I don't know. It seems like nothing really is. They go to sleep with themselves now. Okay, you know, you can argue all these points, of course, but these are primordial qualities, which if you uncover all the conditioning and modern brainwashing, you get down to the raw woman, the raw female inside of the traditional woman, which is nature to be attached. And it's not that these are bad things, these are good things. These are success and devotion to Krishna is based on attachment, which means asakti. Asakti means attachment, right? Yes. Nishta, ruchi, asakti, bhava, and prem. So attachment, you get really attached, then you fall in love, that's called bhava. You go crazy in love, it's called prem. Attachment in material life is a problem, a source of maya and bondage. But attachment directed spiritually is an essential quality of bhakti. The female is naturally inclined to care for others. While not demanding anything for herself, while the male quality, male nature, is the reverse. Male nature is he doesn't care for anybody, he wants everybody to take care of him. He demands, you're my wife. This, that. Oh, shut up. Well, what about me? What do I get out of the deal? You get the happiness of being my slave. Oh, that's nice. Well, now I know the TNC of our relationship. I'm out, man. Good night. Then she says, the Jaya Devi. When I was in the ashram, which means Shiva Institute, I experienced this. I was busy doing my different services for the ashram. I noticed how the men in the ashram would take the benefits of my services based on their belief of the superiority of their position and gender. Men are mostly engaged in positions of leadership, teaching, and receiving service from others, while women are expected to be the followers who silently listen, obey, and continue with their allotted duties. Women are natural teachers. And Shastras describe them as the first guru, Adi Guru Mata, Mata Adi Guru. Also, a woman's brain works more in a relational way, which allows her to absorb knowledge and accept the conclusion of scripture in a more intuitive and holistic way. This is a PhD lady writing. The woman's natural qualities of humility and service enable her to absorb the essence of spiritual knowledge and realize in the teachings realize spiritual teachings in a personal and insightful way. The male brain focuses more on technical aspects and adept at grasping technical philosophical hypotheses employed in scripture. I experienced this while attending classes at the Jiva Ashram. I would hear meticulous, logical, and technical questions being put forth by the men regarding the nature of the soul, the relationship with the Absolute. The men were trying to understand themselves and their connection with Krishna through their intellect. Well, myself, being a woman, I understood the same topic by learning about the personal relationship between Krishna and his devotees. So just see, women are more emotional, more personal, more relation-oriented. Bhagavan and Bhakta, guru and disciple. And the men are seeing technical and philosophy and type and all this stuff. That doesn't work much in Bhakti. All that masculinity and male projection creates pride and egoism and competition with the guru. Competition with the guru and envy of the guru. I saw it very prominently in the last batch I had with the Rami. The inspiration of the female to teach is an expression of their affectionate nature, affectionate mood. So women teach out of desire, affection to help people. Just like we have our Dr. Yashasini. Maybe she's watching now, I don't know. Is it live? It's not live broadcast. She's a doctor, MD, regular professional doctor. She helps you with loving mood. She has a mood of love, whereas most men are in it for the money. Anything a man is into is for money. They don't have much affection. They're selfish creatures. But that doesn't work much in Bhakti. Bhakti is based on submission, service, humility. So that's why we're stressing female qualities give Krishna praying, no matter whether you're a man or a woman. That's why some spiritual lineages, they have many disciples of their husbands or become Diksha gurus. Like when you see in our line, we have Shyam Vyodini, and we have Hari Priya Goswami, we have Malika Goswami. We have three or four or five ladies. Either they're wives of the man before them or daughters of the man before them. Like, for example, Krishna Nishra. The next group is Subhadra Goswami. Subhadra Goswami is his daughter, I believe. I asked the Waitadas, and he said many cases are like this. His family's because his Vansh Parampara means descendants. Krishna Mishra is the son of Advaita. And then, so then to be Advaita family, then they see whether it must be a daughter or a wife. Connection, not some outside. The first outside person of the parampara is Snandas. Snandas took from a Vamsacharya Anandagopal. From Anandagopal all the way to Krishna Mishra family, all the way to Vamsacharya. But the Vams became broken by Snandas Rosi and Krishna's Rosi and Madangopal Das. So the wife would give diksha mantras to her son and other disciples of her husband after they had first received mantras from him. That's interesting. They knew that the disciples knew that the mantras received from the wife of the guru were more powerful because they were mixed with her own devotion. So the guys would take diksha from Ananda Gopal Goswami. Well, I would say, Shami Nodini. And I would say, not Shami Nodini. Where's the group? Ramamaya. Anyway, that's what the idea is. The disciple would take diksha from the husband, they take from the wife to get her devotion. He used to take the water twice. That's really interesting. In other words, they accepted and honored the women as gurus. Why? Because they have more devotion than a husband. And that's what we want. We want bhakti, we want bhava, we want praying. I reflected over the relationship between a guru and disciple is a bond of love, where the guru of compassion bestows grace upon the disciple for a spiritual advancement. These internal qualities in the guru originate in the divine female mood. What are the qualities of the guru? Compassion, love, kindness. The guru has to have, that's why it says in Hari Bhakti Das that the guru has parental vatsalya bhava. Guru is my mate. What's that song in Bhakti Antakura has a song in it? Krishna Mata Krishna Pita Krishna Prananda Sharavanjane Sharavanjane. How do you know that?
Nadiya
Godrume Nityananda Mahaja. Right. Nadiya Godrume Nityananda Mahaja Krishna Mata Krishna Pita Krishna Prananda. So Krishna is my mother, Krishna my father, Krishna Prananda. So Guru Sakshat. Sakshat Hari, Swayam Hari. So Guru is Swayam Hari, Guru is Sakshat Hari. So Guru is mother, Guru is father. Their female nature engage it for service of Krishna and devotees. Transcendence does not mean sublimation or restraint of a woman's inherent nature. So to be spiritual, be a spiritual woman, to be a devotee of Krishna, doesn't mean that you suppress your natural female qualities. That you express. It is a higher dimension that supports healthy integration and expression of the female nature. Vedic culture supports this. The true message of Shastra honors and protects the essence of the female, which in turn empowers women to rise above gender altogether. Pretty cool. The nature of the woman to be attached to Krishna, to be submissive to Krishna, to serve Krishna, or attached to Guru, serve Guru, and surrender to Guru, and express that nature. This empowers them to rise above their womanhood and become transcendental spiritual beings. Might of love and divine qualities. So womanly nature is not a source of bondage, it's a source of liberation. whereas a man attached to his manly nature and his pride and egoism and detachment is a source of rebirth and bondage. Therefore, feminine, female qualities give
Krishna
prema. This is a nice point that Jayadevi makes. The relationship between hearing and chanting about Krishna, which, what kind of bhakti is that called?
Svarupasita bhakti.
Sir, what did you say?
Svarupasita bhakti.
Yes, thank you. Correct. Svarupasita bhakti. Hearing and chanting, remembering Krishna's name, form, qualities, and pastime. So what's the relationship between that and practical service of working in an office? I would often say I'd rather be hearing and chanting than working in the office or teaching online or managing the Russian house, Russian madhouse. I had to add that to it also. It's pretty crazy over there. All those Ruswas doing their Rusy business. So because she was engaged, and she's still engaged for the last 30 years, is serving and living in Jiva Ashram and managing. She manages the ashram, food and classes and booking and whatever. She does a lot of office work. Everybody else is going to class, she's in office managing. So she one day thought, how can I attain my spiritual goal of being in office all day? I wanted to sit quietly in my room and study Sanskrit, because she just had a PhD in Sanskrit. Now she's typing letters and, you know, taking rent money and giving receipts. And when I discussed this with Babaji, he said, yes, you are free to do whatever you want, but you should understand wherever you go, you will take yourself with you. Whatever problems you face in your office, you also face in your room or in temples you visit. And she says you want to leave her position and go visit temples. I accepted his advice, although with some hesitation, I returned to my office. Literally say, get back in the office, push the papers, answer the phones, send out the receipts. Doesn't sound too liberal. I gradually became more and more skilled in managing different situations that arose. And I see, as looking back, that this experience gave me excellent opportunity to practice patience, endurance, humility, and remain equal poised in demanding circumstances. Along with the external confrontations gradually being revealed to, as merely the mirrors of my own shortcomings, he's a really good writer, my life in the ashram began opening up to a path of inner reflection that allowed my age-old material concepts to transform into novel spiritual insights. Very good writer, very good speaker of philosophy and psychology. This is point nine. The need to maintain the female identity. She was reading different Vedic scriptures, of course, in Sanskrit, getting different misconceptions about the viewpoint of women, etc. And gradually, she gained to understand what they're really trying to say. She said I finally saw how the Vedic scriptures repeatedly uphold and honor women and have many provisions in the Shastra for protection of women and ability to choose her path and her freedom to choose her path in life. In later times, a decline in the status of women infiltrated and brought in a masculine-oriented concept into certain religious schools. The Vedic sages, on the other hand, were concerned with the spiritual enlightenment of humanity, and the purpose of their spiritual provisions was to create an environment that supported such enlightenment both for women and men. The core wisdom expounded in ancient Indian Shastras honored the essential feminine female qualities as a way to liberation. What it perceived as being, quote, bondage in traditional values actually has within it a platform upon which transcendence can take place. Pretty interesting. With the infiltration of Western ideas and Western dominance in India, women gradually became deprived of their matchless female identity. And when that happened, it created precarious implications. In our endeavor to become equal to men, we women derided our innate feminine nature, which gradually destroys the unique ability of women to love. Very, very deep woman. In other words, what happened? Men became more egoistic and dominating the female in the world, especially in India, due to Western influence and cultural perversion ideas of masculine supremacy, etc. And then women, as a protective measure, they adopted a more masculine outlook, more aggressive, more independent, aggressive, unfeeling, rational viewpoint, and not losing the sensitivity and feelings of the divine feminine to compete with the male-oriented culture and world. You know, unisex clothing, women leaders, women politicians, we can do it. We're equal or better than you. So that's what the modern world was created. All the havoc is created by upsetting the nature of the feminine. So as women endeavored and tried to become one with equal to men in all different fields, they lost their feminine, gradually destroyed the unique ability of women to love. That's pretty pretty set sentence. I mean, that's her subjective viewpoint. She's a lady writing, but she's not a woman. A pretty smart woman. And this read this book after 25 years of being a disciple of a great pundit and broad-minded thinking person. She already is a very broad-minded, well-experienced woman who rode a bicycle around the world. After 25 years living in Vrindavan and serving 24 hours a day her guru, hearing teaching, this is her conclusion. So it's something to be thought of, accepted, and thought about. Whether you accept it or not, I don't know. I'm trying to appreciate it from a different viewpoint. Now, the need to maintain female identity. So we have a couple of entries more here. Spirituality, in other words, being Krishna conscious, needs female qualities of empathy and perseverance in preference to imitating Male characteristics such as competition and aggression. Men are competitive and aggressive. But we show the qualities of empathy and patience. To devalue the female in one's person creates an obstacle to discovering one's inner woman, as it is the female qualities that allow us to rise above material nature and contact the divine. That's a very profound statement. That's why Prabhupada himself said in the early 60s, our ladies' souls have more advantage because they have soft hearts and they're submissive and they like to serve. They have more advantage than their male counterparts. They have more advantage to become Krishna Bhakti, get Krishna Prema, easier and faster than men. The feminine qualities allow us to rise above material nature and contact the divine. The feminine qualities which we described, about patience and empathy, sympathy, love, care, humility, submission, service, these are all good qualities. This is Gita chapter 10, verse 34. And this chapter 10 is called Vibhuti or something. What was the title of the chapter?
Vibhuti
Yoga. The opulences and powers of Krishna. Among beasts, I am a lion. Among stars, I am the moon. Among brilliant things, I am the sun. Among fish, I am the makar. Kirti.
Famous.
Fame. Shri.
Beauty.
Beauty. Money. You're woman means beauty. Your body, your beauty. Woman means my beauty, my husband's body. That's the meaning of Shri, or elaborate purport. And then we have, fine speech. So other thing here we have, Chaduchi, Kapya, Kundivi, the other time we're floating around here. We have Dritti,
courage,
Kshama, forgiveness. Now I got, the lady Jayashri said, now I got free from the idea that Shastras are suppressing women. And I understood the hidden inner meaning of Shastra. Shastra are really trying to bring out the inner female qualities in everyone, men and women. My experience of freedom and love in this world is relative and limited. But beyond this is a higher dimension. I studied the lives of many Indian single women from South India, and are mentioned in the beginning of the book. I never heard of them, but they're famous few from South India. The intent, the conclusion is, the intense power of absorption obtained by faith in higher power was the most striking characteristic of the women I studied. She studied the lives of 50 or 60 women, famous in ancient India. So they were absorbed. That's the point. Yoga defines the aim and purpose of absorption is to merge the individual self with the absolute. This yoga, Vishishta. Vishishta yoga means merging in Brahman. Merge with the light. I am one with divine light. Divine light mission. I see the light, I am the light. Become the light. Light of Brahman. In bhakti, what we becomes absorbed in an intimate relationship with Krishna. Here, in bhakti, emotions are channeled in devotion and are most valuable because these emotions have the power to bind one in an intimate relationship with Krishna. The highest expression of all emotions in love is love for Krishna. Praying. Humility is an essential quality in love. What did I say?
Humility is the essential quality in love.
And opposite of humility is what?
Pride.
What does pride do?
Kills everything.
Pride makes people self-centered, selfish. Basically, a proud person is in love with himself or herself only. Their pride prevents them from showing affection and love for others. They use others, abuse others, and use others. Humility allows us to empathize with others, and in turn generates the power of absorption. Humility generates absorption. I recognize the relationship between humility and absorption and how they are the heart of self-spiritual realization. Humility does not mean meekness, but instead requires a high sense of self-discipline to remain steady within oneself, not become affected by self-praise. Because if you're successful in doing something, you get praised. So when you're getting praised and honored, to maintain humility takes inner power, inner fixity of consciousness. What do you call affected? It means, humility means not feeling qualified even though we know we are. Humility means
feeling not qualified.
Not feeling qualified when we know we are. These are six symptoms of surrender. To feel one of the six symptoms, I don't think any Krishna. No, I don't the Sankhava, Pratikavasavarjana. One of the qualities, to feel oneself incapable, inability to do something, even though one can do it, you still call us the Lord, call us the Krishna for help and ability to carry on his or her task or saving. It took me many years of bhakti to learn this. While managing the ashram, I found it hard to accept criticism and being insulted. I was troubled by pride of others. I would think, why should I let other people pass judgments on me? Not realizing I was blinding myself to the unseen power inherent in humility. She was running Jiva Institute. She has been running. She is running Jiva Institute for 25 years. And she's a lady, young lady, beautiful lady, Western lady. So many rumors were flying around Vrindavan about Jiva Institute and Sajarai and her and this and that. That always is there. Always is there. So there was no basis, but there's a lot of insulting statements and letters going back and forth. And so it was must have been difficult for her because she's out of beyond all that kind of stuff. So she was being insulted. So she realized by if she became proud and got disturbed by people passing judgments on her character or her morality or her behavior, that she was becoming blind to the unseen power of humility. There she just eat humble pie, we say in America, eat humble pie and you come out a winner. Try to fight fire with fire, what happens?
You
get burned. Gradually I learned by patience, by being silent and persistent, determined in one's own seva is more effective than being assertive and reactionary behavior. Now, somebody tit for tat, somebody hits you, hit them back. But instead of hitting back, oh, hit me, turn the other cheek, like Jesus said. I'm not reacting. I'm not gonna pull me into this cat and mouse game. I'm not gonna fall for this. I'm not gonna fall for this ego trap. I'm gonna maintain my dignity, maintain my inner peace, maintain my inner sanctity. I'm not playing the game of your ego and your aggression and your criticism. I'm beyond all that. I know where I am. I know where I stand. I know what I represent. And Krishna knows. My Guru knows. To the hell with you. I won't react, I won't respond, I won't fight back. That's humility. Shriana Pisri Chena, Jory Vasishana, Maina Maina Tirna Sada. It takes years and years of practice of bhakti to come to this level of advancement. You hear what I say? So we're still in this relationship of humility and absorption. So when the Shastras talk about stri or woman, the real meaning is the female quality, which is symbolized, when we say woman, it represents a quality, the female qualities of surrender and humility. Only the inner female qualities can give the determination and courage to surrender. That's amazing statement. Only the inner, internal female qualities of surrender and humility can give one the determination and courage to surrender. That's why I said in three notes, the most typical revolution, the biggest revolution in one's life is surrender. Surrender to Guru and surrender to Krishna. It's the biggest revolution. The ego, independence, ego, meanness, minus, it makes us minus. Meanness and minus makes us minus, M-I-N-U-S, Krishna and Guru Kripa. Only the inner female qualities can give us determination and courage to surrender. Our topic is absorption and attaining Krishna Prem. Sounds desirable. What are the factors that determine absorption? One, desire to be with one's beloved. You can become absorbed in Krishna, you can desire to live with Krishna, see Krishna, be Krishna. And absorbed in the beloved's consciousness and our own consciousness. These three dynamics, which are deeply interrelated, determine the intensity of love we can attain, as well as our destination after death. This lady is really a great writer, great philosopher. We have an intense desire to be with Radharani and the Gopis and our Sakigan, Vishagagan, and Sampura Mandri, and Kanak Mandri, and Guru Saki Mandri, and my own Mandri, and be absorbed in the consciousness of Krishna, and Radharani's consciousness, be absorbed in my consciousness as being their dasi, being their seva. This makes absorption. There's nothing less than you have. Your body means you have to live somewhere, and they have body and consciousness, two things, body and consciousness. Your consciousness absorbed in Radharani, and your own consciousness of Radharani, and Radharani's consciousness, awareness of herself, and your body is there in Goloka Vrindavan with Radharani. That covers everything, body and consciousness. The consciousness of whom we are absorbed in plays a major part in determining our destination. As our consciousness is absorbed in Radharani, then where do we go? We go to Radharani. What's the story about Prabhupada and his disciples? It goes like this. Prabhupada was meeting with disciples. One disciple raised his hand. He said, Prabhupada, you know, we're worried, you know, when we die, we're not very Krishna conscious. We're not really thinking of Krishna very much. We're thinking of my wife and kids and you know, but, you know, so where are we gonna, you know, we think of you a lot. You know, we see you, we cook for you, we eat your food, we go places with you, we go on Harinam with you, we go to yoga classes, yoga studios, you give lectures, we do kirtan, we go to programs, we go to pandals with you, you chant, lecture, we dance and chant. So we do things together with you. So we always think of you. So if we die, we don't think we're going to think of Krishna. We're going to think of you when we die. So where are we going to go when we die? If you don't remember Krishna when you die, you can't go to Krishna. And Prabhupada said, well, you go, if you're thinking of me, you go where I am. And Yamanadas, he said, well, you'll be with Krishna. And Prabhupada said, so you come to Krishna? And he said, Jai Prabhupada. So she was remembering that story, and that's the full expression of it. That's the idea. You're thinking of the Guru at the time of death, you go to the Guru when she's Krishna. Think of Krishna's time of death, you go to Krishna and see Guru. Mm-hmm. You think of Guru, you go to Golabrunam, hey Gurudev! Look who's here. Oh, it's Krishna. Oh, Radharani. All three will be together. Can't separate Krishna, Radharani, and Guru, they're all together. Is our consciousness while performing our activities that determines result in terms of destination, not the external activities in themselves. It's not cooking, just cooking and kissing, moving around gas and sabji and roti. The consciousness, I'm doing this to please Krishna or please my guru. The consciousness is what liberates you, not the cauliflower. Not the roti. How to obtain perfect eternal divine love. That sounds pretty good. Both Radharani and Kuja were greatly enchanted by Krishna. While Kuja wanted erotic union with Krishna for her own satisfaction, Radharani was selfless, wanted to please Krishna even at the expense of her own happiness. There's a verse in Chaitanya Charitamrita in Atila discussed chapter 20. Antidota chapter 20, last chapter on the where Mahabharata is giving a commentary on Shikshastakam. He speaks in Shikshastakam, then he gives a commentary. Shikshastakam is a Sanskrit prayer. Lord Chaitanya gives a commentary in Bengali. It's recorded by Krishna's Kaviraj. And the last verse is what? Shikshastakam. Ashri Shiva Paratam Pinastram Adarshanam Marmahatam Karotuva Ashri Shiva Paratam Pinastram Adarshanam Marmahatam Karotuva. So in the commentary on that verse, which is spoken by Krishna and Radha-bhav, Radha's Mahabhav, and Gambira Lila, Lord Chaitanya gave a commentary. And speaking with the voice of Radharani, and commenting on this verse, Radharani says, on verse 8, Lord Chaitanya gives a commentary, speaking from the mother of Radharani. Radharani says, if Krishna gets happiness by making me unhappy, then unhappiness becomes the source of my greatest happiness. That's an amazing selfless, self-forgetful concept of reality. You break my arm and make you a certain kind of sadist, giving pain to others, but makes you smile, laugh, and jump around, be happy, then I'm happy you break my arm. Or to show emotional pain, break my heart or whatever. But Ryan, that's the extent of her love. Was preem is defined with the money. What is the definition of preem?
There are 1,000 reasons to give up the lover, still one doesn't give up the lover.
Rai, you want to please Krishna even at the expense of her own happiness. Consequently, Kuja's love is ordinary, Sadharani Rati, or Radha attains the purest and sweetest love, Samarta Rati. Different results reflect the distinctive levels of intensity in Kuja and Radha's moods. While Kuja acted within the Dharma of courtesan, which means a prostitute, Radha's acts were prompted solely by intense love that was beyond rules and regulations of society. Risking social censure for the sake of Krishna's happiness, she went beyond Dharma and achieved a distinction. The idea here is this. This is, sometimes people present differently, but the general description in Puranas of Kuja was she was a prostitute. Although BBT book says she's hunchback, Srivakra, and she was too ugly, nobody would enjoy her. She was a virgin when Krishna enjoyed her. But this point, she studies stories in Sanskrit, and she's saying that Kuja didn't act out of her dharma. Because even 5,000 years ago in Krishna's time, there were ladies who were prostitutes. And the kings would have got another girlfriend on Friday night or something. The prostitutes have always been in society, even Krishna Lila, they're described in Krishna book, 10th canto, Dwarka Lila. When Krishna came back to Dwarka from Hastinapur, all the prostitutes were greeting him on the road, throwing rice and stuff. They're considered auspicious, actually, members of society. Prostitutes were protected. They had a separate house. There wasn't some pimp in charge. There was somebody in charge. They were regulated by the government. They were provided first-class education, first-class housing, first-class clothing, and medical facilities were provided for prostitutes. In Vedic culture, they weren't treated like some tramps, some red light district, some dirty part of the city, all drug addicts and derelicts on the street, and some lady standing in front of a shop showing her legs, her body, trying to get customers. That's modern day prostitute. It's not like that at all. Prostitute was a profession that was regulated by the government, protected by the government. They're restricted. They're not tramps. They're dressed very finely. They're courtesans. They're members of the royal court. That's what the English word is, courtesan. Courtesan, C-O-U-R-T-E-S-A-N, the prostitute. Like in Japan, they have geisha girls. Geisha girls is not an ordinary prostitute. Geisha girls, a dancer, she cooks, she's a dancer, she sings, she tells poetry. The guy goes to the geisha girl, it costs like $1,000 an hour, whatever. And it's not just 5 minutes, a half hour in the bed and go out on the street and do it again. They stay 3 or 4 days with the guy. A guy comes to Tokyo every month on business. He has his geisha girl, and she has an apartment. She cooks for him and entertains him in so many different ways, tells jokes. It's like a companion, respectful, like a second wife or second girlfriend. That's some 5 minutes, you know, sex thing in the bed. You know. So it's all different cultures and everything's. All animals, dogs and cats everywhere. So Kuja was acting out of dharma. She wasn't acting out dharmically to sleep with Krishna and pull on his dhoti, come onto my house and all that. That's where she was, a little forward motion there, the fast Ferrari. And she wanted Krishna, she said, stay at my house for a week or two. I have all food, I already have food here for 2 weeks. I have all kinds of cheese and crackers, cheddar cheese and crackers, and biscuits, salted biscuits. And we have frozen tortillas and frozen pizzas. We can spend 2 weeks here having fun. She said, no, I won't look good. I came out of I stayed in the living room. I went in the bedroom with you. Now I'm finished. It wouldn't look good if I stay here. I'm leaving. So I left. So no one worries if some guy comes around. Rani, she gave all culture, all dharma, everything. Krishna was madly in love with Shannon with selfish desire for Krishna. Rani didn't have any selfish desire, but she gave up everything for Krishna. Swadushtijam. She rejected everything. So our love is actually higher and pure and transcendental, beyond all dharma. And she distinction of Radharani being the greatest lover of Krishna, having the utmost amorous affection for Krishna. So this is the conclusion of this book. After concluding my research, I spent many years searching all around the world to find the answer for what is the perfect love. I'm giving you this book in 5 minutes. It was revealed to me by grace. Love is of different types and intensities, and we can acquire love by absorption in the person who already has it. This is the complete answer to my quest. The answer for which I sacrifice everything, and the answer I wish to share with all quote, women. It says women and men. The secret of attaining divine love is to become absorbed in a person who already is absorbed in divine love. And for her, who is that? Satan Raindas Babaji. And also Madhavi, what's her name?
Malati
Dasi, she's an older, little older woman, German woman. She's also a disciple, also been there for 25 years. So if there's anything material going on, one of them would have been dead. There's two women, maybe more women there involved in management and working intimately and cooperatively and big seva for Sajjarani Das Sanjeev Institute. And four or five women are there for 25 years and they're all still alive. So that proves, and he's also alive. That proves a transcendental situation. All women can experience, I would say, all men and women, can experience the inner path of divine love simply by engaging the female qualities that they are naturally endowed with. They can attain the love they aspire for, whether they be single or married, intellectually inclined or amorously oriented, career women, homemakers, or breastfeeding mothers. The secret to attaining divine love and permanent love is to become absorbed in the right person. Amen. I mean, she quotes a verse from Bhagavatam, fantastic verse, famous verse. Seventh count of Bhagavatam, chapter 1, verse 31. Tasmat, kenap, yuvayena, mana krishna nishaviya. By hook or by crook, absorb your mind in Krishna, the Supreme Beloved. So by hook or by crook, absorb your mind in somebody that loves Krishna. I realized when I was a teenager, I really doubted the validity and reality of worldly love. I had not been mistaken. Beyond worldly material love is a more subtle dimension which is not dependent on material interaction. The more subtle dimension of pure love is where one can experience total individual freedom and oneness in love at the same time. Total individual freedom and oneness in love at the same time. I pick up my journal to write in my journal for the last time. It's really cool book, I love this book. Here's your quote. Love is absorption, the internal experience independent of anything external. External means kisses, fondling, lying together, intertwined bodies, union, copulation, or intercourse, wherever you want to go. There's something higher realm here. And she, you know, she writes beautifully. Love is an absorption, an internal experience independent of anything external. And oftentimes when she was writing her journal, this is a 25-year journal and 100 pages. 25 years experience, 9 years living in Thailand with her quote unquote ideal lover. Living with a guy for 9 years. Riding a bicycle around the world, meeting one guy in Thailand, living with a guy for 9 years, and saying it's not it, moving on. Hey, Lee has experience, heavy experience. And she's a psychologist, philosopher, and Sanskrit pundit, and devotee, high class devotee. Really amazing. I never met her. I don't know if I ever will, but I met her. I met her in a book. So this is the last thing she wrote. Well, what I was saying, during her living at 25 years in Jiu Institute, when it gets hot and heavy and too much strain of management, she used to go to the Amuna Bank. Because she feels late. She's not afraid of any goodness or anything. She'd ride a bicycle around the world by herself. Pretty fearless, tough lady, and she's a good looking lady and doesn't look like, you know, a sumo wrestler or anything, but she's strong connection with God, knowing no fear, no hesitation. So she go to the bank of the Amuna and take shelter of the Amuna in a very personal way. The Amuna would talk to her, the waves and the moving water would talk to her and soothe, give her realization. So that thread is throughout the book. She's a really good writer. Because she always humanizes going throughout the book. So here she is. She used imagery. I read the whole paragraph, it's pretty good. Because she humanizes a big part of her self-discovery and finding real love. And she wrote the last few paragraphs were all about humanizing. Because this journal ends here, she finishes her journal. Now she's just doing shaving. No need to write anymore. Just loving. Loving means expressing. Like some people say, I don't want to say I love you. I want to show I love you. And we have a phrase in America, actions speak louder than words. I love you. Can you cook it louder? No, I'm tired. Cook it yourself. Hey, Bob. What is your love? I love you. It's hard to roll up your sleeves and fix my car, you know. I became absorbed in the dark blue waters, swiftly flowing and silently unwavering by. Just as humanity's waters flowed by, there was instantly more flowing behind, all without a break or cessation. It was the same with my quest, my search for love. Just as one search was completed, that completion held within the beginning of another search, where fulfillment and continuation became virtually one. Yes, I thought, just like the flow of true love. Just like the flow of true love. She's comparing the flow of true love like the Amuna. It never stops, it just keeps going. Yes, I thought, just like the flow of true love, its fulfillment and continuation become a single flow of joy that never ends. That's really cool. That's the closing of the book. A new journey, and then she closes it with a bold print. A new journey begins, together. Really profound. In other words, new journey. She was searching for love. Love means a person is worthy of love. And service, and it goes on forever, endless love. And so I found that love I found that person. Now, a new journey of love begins together. Together means what? Two together is spelled T-O, but it's actually T-W. Together means to gather. The G-E-T-H-E-R, I spell G-A-T-H-E-R. Two people gather together their love in order to Krishna. This is Bhakti Bhajan. Jai Jai Sri Radhe.